Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Well, I'm delighted to have on the line now Alex Rosenberg on his book, How History Gets Things Wrong, The Neuroscience of Our Addiction to Stories. Good afternoon, Alex. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Great to have you on. And now you're a professor of philosophy at the Duke University, and this book's interesting because just last week, Alex, you wouldn't know this, but we were talking to somebody about the power of storytelling and how to use it in a business setting. So there is definitely something to storytelling, isn't there?
Oh, a great deal. And at least half of my book is about the power of storytelling and why it is almost an innate, unlearned instinct that we all carry around with us, and the only way that we are really satisfied and have our curiosities reduced.
So are you coming at it from a positive point of view? Because storytelling can be used in a positive way, but there's also, obviously, if it's incorrect and it's false information, there's a negative side as well.
Yes, I'd say more, the cup is more half empty than half full. I talk about the important role of stories in mobilizing human action and in feeding our emotions, which are often destructive. And the other part, the hard part of the book, is why storytelling is based on a theory that has no grip on the nature of brain processes.
Okay, I mean, all of us are brought up from a very early age on stories, Alex, aren't we? It's very much part of our development, and it's very much part of the way in which we do life to an extent. So it's always, for me, it feels like there's never been a time where stories haven't been part of my life, for instance.
No. Well, stories go back at least to the Pleistocene. The thing is, stories are driven by the theory of mind, and the theory of mind was imposed on us as a quick and dirty solution to a design problem, a survival problem that we had at the bottom of the African food chain when we first arrived out of the rainforests at least a million years ago, or our hominin ancestors. And it's been driven by that process into our brains in such a way that it is nearly innate. And it's no surprise, because we need to we need this theory of mind that drives stories in order to learn anything else, whether it's language or customs or what our parents teach us by imitation. And of course, the difference between us and the other primates is that we can learn by imitation. And it's because we've got this theory of mind in our heads. Yeah. And that's all sort of on the good side. But the bad side is it's a theory that is very crude and very poor beyond its immediate domain of application.
Okay, so I'm just trying to get my head around this, because a lot of times we learn through stories and a narration of a story that's happened, history, so on. And that's really what you're talking about here, isn't it? Because how reliable is our history when it's told in this format?
Exactly right. And it's not just that the theories that our stories are not reliable because the evidence is always incomplete. If you understand what neuroscience has shown us about the nature of the brain, the stories aren't just incomplete or insufficiently evidenced. They're just wrong.
Yeah. Now, I'm trying to get my head around this, Alex, and you're going to have to help me, because I'm not the brightest tool in the box.
When it comes it's to a hard theory to understand.
Because obviously there is data, information that we have now that we're recording and will probably be used in the future, and that's happened throughout history. Where do we draw the line between ignoring it and taking it with a pinch of salt.
So historians and others, we don't have any trouble getting our chronologies right. Mm. Everybody knows that the feudalism was before the Renaissance and yeah. that Islam is a younger religion than Christianity. Yeah. Getting the points, the dots correct, that's not a problem. It's connecting the dots. And the way we connect the dots is by telling stories, and the stories rely on a theory that's completely mistaken. So there's a lot of great history that's done, especially academic history, that isn't storytelling, and I'm not attacking that. It's the storytelling yeah. part that I think is mistaken.
What's difficult, then, for the likes of me and others, I should imagine, this is probably where your book comes and helps us, is knowing where that line is, Alex, because, you know, there's no denying certain things happened. They may have been embellished, of course, and that might be the issue that you bring into the boil here. But it's difficult to know where that line is.
Well, yes, that World War II happened and that it happened after World War I,
yes.
That's not a problem. But if we try to figure out exactly why, say, Adolf Hitler declared war on the United States when he didn't have to and made such a catastrophically stupid decision, the explanation that we seek and the one that satisfies us, I want to argue, is based on a complete misunderstanding of the nature of human decision making.
I suppose the problem is, Alex, we're all we all want to know the answer to that, don't we?
Yes, exactly right.
Yeah.
Precisely. We can't shake this desire, this need for stories. It is, as I said, the only thing that really reduces our psychological feeling of curiosity. And it's one of the reasons why we're so bad at science, at grasping the explanation of things that depends on theories and laws and models and equations and data, because our minds are organized to demand stories.
Yeah. So, for instance, and I use that example there that you talk about Hitler there, in that particular instance, if the story isn't 100% true, or maybe there's an element of truth in there, we really don't know, like you say, what danger or damage does it make if we are told the wrong story on that?
Well, if we think that we understand human affairs by stories, then we try to apply them to control and to predict the future. So, for example, a diplomatist will study the Congress of Vienna the way Henry Kissinger did in order to design foreign policies for countries. But if their understanding of the Congress of Vienna is based on a completely wrong understanding of the processes that went through the heads of people like Metternich and Castlereagh and Talleyrand and the Tsar, then they will make catastrophically bad predictions about the future, which will harm us all.
Does your book give us examples of history? I mean, I'm thinking really, you know, the Earth being flat or the center of the universe, which we believe for many years. Does your book give examples along those lines?
Yes. In fact, there are several analogies I draw between the theory of mind and theories like phlogiston theory and astrology that explain how a theory could hang around for literally thousands of years while being quite mistaken. And on the other hand, there are positive, helpful ways of really understanding human affairs and human history that could stand us in good stead if they would be used as substitutes for these storytelling inclinations that we have. And I give some examples of which I think the most famous and most accessible is this wonderful book by Jared Diamond called Guns, Germs, and Steel.
Wow. When it comes to where we are today, I think, Alex, we think we know it all, don't we? And I'm thinking, you know, I mean, I'm a bit of a sci-fi freak. So, you know, if I said to you about time travel, we say it's impossible. And based on our own understanding of science, would you say there's an outside chance that it is possible because we're just starting from the wrong foundation, because we're letting history taint us?
Well, you know, physics is the simplest science, and the reason that we can see that physics is the simplest science is because we've gotten the furthest in understanding the basic physical nature of reality. so far have we gotten that quantum mechanics, general relativity are just very hard to understand, let alone string theory. In storytelling, we are at the tip of the iceberg of understanding the nature of human motivation and human behavior. It's very hard to say what the future is going to bring us by way of real understanding or a good scientific grasp on human behavior. What's going to be possible is even harder to imagine in that case than in the case of, say, physics and time travel.
As I said to you last week, we were talking to somebody who works in the business world who's got a book out about storytelling and the power of storytelling, and made a quick comment there that when we're confronted with hard data on a PowerPoint in a presentation, part of our brain responds, but when we're told a story, a true story to whoever's presenting it, suddenly other parts of the brain come into play. And I wondered if you'd come across this kind of evidence as well.
Exactly. There are two regions of the brain that compete with one another in absorbing data and synthesizing it. And one of them in the parietal lobes is where this theory of mind storytelling mechanism sits. And of course, when defective, it produces things like autism and other kinds of difficulties in social interaction. And then there's the another portion of the brain, much more active in the case of analytic, scientific, and mathematical processing. And they actually compete in that when one is in operation, it tends to crowd out and shut down the other. And of course, in kids especially, some of them, some kids are much stronger in math and science than in, say, history and the humanities, and then there are other kids that are the reverse. And this is often due to significant differences in the kinds of interconnections in these two competing parts of the brain.
So it really is quite powerful. So in some respects, are you not fighting a losing battle because the way in which we have developed and the way in which we do react to these stories?
I think it is a losing battle, or at least a battle that I don't want to fight when it comes to the entertainment value of stories and the emotional power that stories have in getting us to do things. Think about the role of the Gulag Archipelago, that three-volume work by Solzhenitsyn in unraveling the entire Soviet Union. Nothing could have done that but a powerful story. And I'm full of admiration for such stories, but at least in some areas of human life, it's probably better to rely on game theory or mathematical modeling of economic processes than to adopt the storyteller's point of view.
Well, Alex, here's the problem I've got, is I like watching history documentaries, and you might have just ruined them for me now.
But, actually, no. The funny thing is I started writing this book because history is the only thing I read.
Yeah.
Literally. Ever since I was a boy, I've been besotted by history.
Yeah.
On the one hand, I wanted a diagnosis of why it is I cared for stories when packaged this way and why everybody remembers information when it comes packaged in stories and never when it comes packaged in models and equations. And I answered that question finally in doing the research for this book. And I am not going to stop reading fiction or biography or history that's driven by stories any more than anybody else's. I just don't want to think about it as knowledge or wisdom,
so
just entertainment.
When you're reading a non-fiction history book, and they're very popular, and or maybe watching a National Geographic documentary or something along those lines, are you sitting there thinking, that's not right, or that it possibly isn't right? And so is your brain kind of, because of the knowledge that you've obtained, now sifting through what you're receiving?
Well, I'm usually sitting here thinking, boy, isn't this seductive?
Yeah.
isn't this moving my emotions in the direction that the author or the director or the screenwriter or even the actors want me to move my emotions? And should I resent being manipulated? And sometimes I can make myself resent being manipulated.
Now, for instance, I mean, here in Spain, a very Catholic country, of course, and because of I'm assuming this is right now, but because of years and years of not being able to read, they had visual things to tell them the stories of the Bible. So that story has been long, then they still have parades today doing that, and it's obviously part of their tradition and part of their culture now. But those stories have gone on for years and years and years, and they're powerful. Some of them are moral stories, of course, about doing the right thing and being moral, but they have power over people, don't they?
Oh, yes. Well, the Corpus Christi parades that you're thinking about in Spain, they're always sort of disconcerting to those of us from North America, because the priests look so much like their clansmen wearing KKK hoods. But the entire
they came first,
process...
Though.
Pardon me?
I think they came first, if I'm right.
Oh, yes, of course. They're much older.
But I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying.
Yeah. But I was just saying, it's disconcerting to us, and you have to put that aside when you watch these processions and recognize that every part of the choreography has a story behind it and a way of thinking about the motives and desires and beliefs of those inside the costumes and of what they want us to take away from the event, from the process, always a way of valorizing either the norms or the institutions and the practices of our culture, all of them inscribed in stories, in plots with narratives with plots, you know, intriguing beginnings, exciting middles, and satisfying denouement, in which, you know, human motivation is the key driver that we all understand from the inside, from our own introspective point of view.
And I think I'm getting the grasp of what you're saying. Some of these stories can be used for good, and probably. But there'll be people that use history for their own ends, of course, and you know, will have history to back up their argument.
Yes, I think that, in fact, that the history of storytelling, going back to the Pleistocene, has, on general, been a force for harm more than a force for good. If you think about the patriarchy, xenophobia, racism, nationalism, religious intolerance, all of these things, all of these features of human life have been driven by and inscribed in stories. And if it weren't for stories, they wouldn't have done the harmful things that they have.
It's a fascinating topic, it really is. And it's just amazing because as we come up to the Christmas period, there's a whole lot of stories going around again. And they'll have a lot of power over our children and over us as adults as well. It's a fascinating look, and it's certainly looking from the neuroscience point of view as well. It really is fascinating. Alex, the book's great. It's called How History Gets Things Wrong, The Neuroscience of Our Addiction to Stories. It's available if you go onto our website at Talk Radio Europe, and you can click on the bookshop banner there and order yourself a copy of the book. Alex, thank you for coming on and telling your story this afternoon.
Yes, it was a great pleasure, and I appreciate getting such intelligent questions.
Oh, thank you very much, Alex. Thanks for that, and we wish you all the very best with the book. Thank you.
And Merry Christmas to you.
And to you. Yep, Merry Christmas. Bye-bye. Thanks, Alex. Bye-bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.